Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. And hey, it's probably truly the last knock somewhere, or if not somewhere sometime soon. No, we are not ending the show, folks. On that note, I am Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is
Billy Crash.
The reason I talk in such fatalistic terms, my friends, is that February is upon us, and it is Women in Horror Month.
As most
of you know. And this idea popped into my head for a show, which I was like, you know what, that's kind of a cool idea, and I felt like there was a lot to work with. So we're doing a show on Women of the Apocalypse tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy and I were talking prior to the show. Billy, did you introduce yourself?
I'm here, Billy Crash. Crashing right into the apocalypse.
Excellent. You're fucking mad. No, you're the humongous Bill.
I am humongous. We want the juice.
Just walk away.
We've all lost someone.
that movie's such a fucking trip, man.
I could see you rocking the humongous outfit, Bill, at like a Halloween party or something.
I do that at the S&M club.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Pixar, it didn't happen though. So, but in any case, prior to the show, we were talking about what our thought process kind of was when we were putting together our lists of our favorite or some noteworthy female characters in apocalyptic cinema. And I was thinking of the apocalypse more as a concept or a genre unto itself, which covers a lot of territory. It does cover horror, but it can cover drama. It can cover most often sci-fi, actually. So I was thinking that would like open up kind of the possibilities for the characters we might discuss. But mm-hmm. what were your thoughts, Billy, going into this and your research for this episode?
Well, I remember we were going to call it the four. Well, we talked about calling it the Four Women of the Apocalypse. So I'm like, if four women are riding their steeds and they're coming in and they're like, it's over. These are the women who I would like to either bring it or stop it. And so I picked what I thought were the strongest four from the horror genre that would rock it and roll it and win the day.
Okay. That's a good criteria for going into it.
Well, I think this is good because I think we're going to have two separate lists now. We're not going to have to worry about any like overages.
Yeah, I think you're right because we did approach this from kind of two different perspectives, which is cool.
Yeah, and it was tough because I had six. Clearly, you know, could have had more, but I narrowed it down to six and I had to cut two out. But I'll put them in as honorable mentions for later, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll have an honorable mention then too.
All right, then I think that's cool.
Yeah, and my number one, I would say, is my number one for the way I was looking at my list. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give our explanations as we go along. You were going to say something, Bill?
No, I don't know. Do you want to just mention our honorables before we get to, like, you know, the our runners-up before we get to the real deal? Do you want to do that first? What do you think?
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead with that and tell me what you got for your runners-up?
Sure. For my two runners-up, I have... I love this because they spelled her name correctly. I think one of the things that horror fans get wrong is it's with Night of the Living Dead, and that's in 1968. Judith O'Day played Barbara, B-A-R-B-R-A,
mm-hmm.
and that wasn't how it was with the remake.
Mm-hmm.
That was, oh my gosh, why is this? All right, Patricia Tallman played Barbara, and completely different character. And I think this is one of the best horror remakes of all time. The Tom Savini rocked it. And,
oh yeah,
he really did. And Patricia Tallman comes in instead of being shell shocked like Judith O'Day's character in 1968. She's wearing a bandolier with shotgun shells on it. She's got a shotgun, and she's like, "Where the fuck are they, man?" Yeah, like she is ready to rock. She's like, "Screw this shit, I'm going in," you know. And I'm like, "Well, hell, man! Like that's the type of person I want to be hanging out with during the apocalypse." So she's one of my runners up, and my other runner up for perseverance in the face of complete and total fear is the one and only Nicole M. Alonzo, Nikki Alonzo, who played Tank in Crawler in Oklahoma Ward's Crawl or Die. I mean, the crap she goes through, and I'm serious. When I was watching it, I was practically getting a panic attack watching what she had to endure to just survive. And I'm like, well, that's the I want to be with her, you know. It's like, where's she going? I'm following her. Yeah, but we're guys and we got guns. I'm following her, you know. It's like, because you guys are just gonna like, well, the bullets aren't working, but I'm gonna stand there and keep firing like an idiot. And she's like, it's time to leave. And there is always a time to leave, you know. Right. So Tank and Barbara, those are my runners up. And I'm sorry. And with Crawl or Die 2, it's going to be interesting to see the expansion of the Tank character. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I hope her character expands while the tunnels get ever smaller.
Oh my gosh, they can't get any smaller. I just got a shiver, man.
You know what, Bill? Just a comment on those. Crawl or Die, I'm claustrophobic as it is, so that movie totally fucked with me. And, you know, there's a great moment that's relatively early on in the film after some of the team is lost and she's at the start of a tunnel and she kind of has this crisis where it's like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I gotta stop. I don't know if it's been a while. I don't know if she says she has to turn back, but someone kind of brings her off the ledge, and she does persevere. She does keep moving forward because that's like in that movie, that's all you can do.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about her character. You know, she pushed through fear the entire time. She had it. It wasn't, and that wasn't a weak. It was just like she's strong enough to like move beyond that. And I think that's one of the signs of courage. Is to be afraid but do it anyway.
Right.
So that's why I thought, like, man, this is a real friggin' character. So
and also she does have she has an objective and she has a mission, so it's like you know, she can't afford to like stop or, you know, think or have doubt kind of. It's more of a matter of I just stay focused on what I'm here to do and do it hopefully through completion. Yeah,
and she's thinking beyond herself. I mean, that's what she wants, somebody who's empathetic and all. I mean, there was a lot, and she, what did she have, like four lines in that movie or something? Yeah, it was pretty, maybe that's too low, but it was pretty limited, but it was all like, you know, it was great, you know, her actions spoke volumes.
Yeah, it was a really physically intense performance and role. Yeah. And I will just say, Bill, because I know we've talked about both Night of the Living Deads on this show, I love both Barbaras as distinctive, as distinctive and appropriate for each of those films.
Yeah, understood. I can't argue that.
But I'm with you. I mean, obviously, Barbara 1990 is the one you're going to want to hang out with because she is that take charge, kind of take no shit either, because while people are standing around her yelling and waving their hands in the air, she's actually taking shots at the zombies who are coming in through the house, you know. She's like, Jesus, fuck this shit, what, you know, what am
Let's
I with
rock!
A fuck. Yeah, you know, to quote Dr. Evil, it's like, I'm with a bunch of freaking morons here. So No, she's great, and I had a crush on her character when I first saw that movie.
Oh, I had a crush on her and Patricia Tallman. Don't worry, Ms. Tallman. I'm
Gotcha, Billy.
Well, it's
Gotcha.
hard not to have a crush on any of these, women. But we'll talk about them, more as we go on. But who's your runner-up?
My runner-up, Bill, and it's not classified as a horror film, but it most certainly takes place in an apocalyptic landscape. It's based off of a graphic novel, but it thankfully does not stick too close to it. And it is Jun Ho Bong's Snowpiercer. It's Tilda Swinton's character Mason from that film,
Oh man. Wow.
who in classic Tilda Swinton fashion is kind of a gender fluid
Quite.
character. Actually, there's a bit of interesting IMDb trivia I saw, in that the character was originally a male, and what was it? Jun Ho Bong apparently intentionally left lines in of Mason being referred to in the masculine form, even though the character was being played by Tilda Swinton and ostensibly is a female character.
Gotcha.
And she certainly has the dress, she has the definitely they she's been compared to Margaret Thatcher,
Yeah.
in her ways, and she has these really grotesque bits of flair, kind of like these Coke bottle glasses that were apparently were apparently hers.
Oh,
And
really?
yeah, what did it say here? The glasses that Mason was wearing were originally Tilda Swinton's. When Jun Ho Bong visited her, they played with her children's play box and found them.
That's awesome, man. She rocks every damn role, whether she's and playing in an androgynous fashion
Right.
or as a full-blown, woman and embracing her femininity. She's just amazing.
Yeah, and she is definitely, without a doubt, a villainous character in this film. She's essentially the mouthpiece for the quote unquote ruling class that lives at the front of the train,
The
where
voice
the
of
film.
oppression. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And she early on in the film, she comes back because she has to keep the back in line, the tail, as she calls it. And it's like, well, remember your place, and this is your place, you belong here, and be happy that you have that much, which isn't much. So she's just totally loathsome throughout the film, and the fact that she has these grotesque kind of physical mannerisms and details, like the removable teeth that she takes out for no reason at
Oh, I
one point.
know.
Yeah, it's just totally unsettling, and it's just like this the sort of eccentricity that you associate kind of like behind closed doors of the ruling class, like what's going on behind those closed doors. They're wearing suits and ties to work and brokering million-dollar business deals, but what's really going on? So I think she's a great epitomization of that sort of character. Not a likable character, but she's great for she's a character you love to hate in that sense. Yeah.
Oh yeah, can't argue that, man. Can't argue that. Oh man. All right,
So
cool.
Bill, do you wanna start off with
Nope. Nope.
well, I know. Okay.
I don't
Well
want
then. Then I
to.
don't want to go to the beach. No fun.
No. Man, I do right now. Holy crap. Man, it's so damn cold out here.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go with my fourth person here. Who would help lead the charge? I was impressed with this character from the movie, and especially because of what her character had gone through beforehand. And that is Neil Marshall's 2005 film, The Descent.
Ah.
And I would definitely choose Ms. Carter, Sarah Carter, who is played by Shauna McDonald. And she's Spelunking with several friends. It's an all female, you know, it's a female outing. You know, it's all women going out.
Yes.
Going out and going down. And in the dark. And she has had a horrible experience in her life. She's lost her husband. She's lost her child in a horrific accident with one of the most chilling, shocking scenes in the movie. And then she's suddenly, you know, underground with her friends, and they're attacked by these subterranean dwellers. Let's, you know, not Chud, but but maybe something close. And she just has this "I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore" type attitude. And she, like, unleashes these years of pure, unadulterated rage. And, like, beware any of these friggin', you know, subterranean shits that come in her way, because you will be annihilated. And it's, you know, she, it's funny because she's intelligent, she's athletic, and she's, in the end, she's like even more powerful than I think she even thought she was. So it's great to see her go above and beyond the post-traumatic stress that she experienced with the loss of her loved ones, and using that as a force to help keep her alive now. Because when you look at her character in the film, you can almost see, like, her, like, she could go two ways. She could go the way that she did, ultimately. Mm-hmm. Or she could go, you know what, my husband and my daughter are dead. So just that, you know, she could just give up.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no, man, I want to live. You know, I'm part of, you know, yeah, my family's lost, but, you know, they wouldn't want to see me go out this way. And I want to live. So I just think it was really amazing the transformation her character went through the entire film. And I love her. She's a badass.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting choice, Bill, because it's kind of like you're thinking of the cave kind of as its own kind of walled in apocalypse in a way, kind of.
Like, yeah, it's, yeah, I like, was. Yeah,
you're stuck. There's no escape, kind mm-hmm. of in an abstract sense there.
Well, to think of and for the whole female aspect, you know, a cave, a cavern, this hollow opening. Within, you know, it's the womb in the earth, and it's like a womb that isn't protective. It's like an anti-womb.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, I was just falling over myself with the thematic elements, man.
Yeah, that's a good call. And, you know, you bring up some good points about that character, because she is presented, you know, as suffering this great loss, and this whole trip is kind of her chance to kind of reconnect with her friends, but kind of reconnect socially with people as well.
Mm-hmm.
But she is presented as kind of like the drag on the whole group in a way, you know, in the early going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, and one of the scenes that kind of had me clutching my chest basically was when she's crawling through one of the caves, and there's a cave in, and she's stuck.
Yes.
And they have to, I think they have to, like, help drag her out. But the way Marshall shoots it is, like, there's just darkness all around her, and there's just this circle of light from her flashlight.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, like, there is that genuine feeling of, oh, can you do this, you know? Mm-hmm. Can I make it through this? Or am I just going to stay, you know, another metaphor. It's like, oh, am I just going to stay stuck here till I die, kind of, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of drown in the grief that I'm feeling. So
absolutely,
but like you said, she doesn't at all.
Nope, she does not succumb.
Yeah,
she's excellent. A winner. Thank you.
Good choice, Bill.
Thank you, thank you. All right, who's your first, man?
Well, you know, this film, I feel like, is not necessarily well known.
I love it already.
Well, it's written and directed by two people you love, Bill, the Duffer Brothers. But it's Hidden from 2015. And the character is Claire, played by Andrea Riseborough.
I love her. I know, I have to see this movie, man.
You know what? The Duffer Brothers kind of make it sound like they're not very proud of this, but really? I Yeah, it's kind of strange, but you know, you watch it and you can kind of see the stylistic ticks that they kind of brought to Stranger Things, and also the way they handle scenes with children. You can definitely kind of connect the dots to how they went from this to Stranger Things, which, you know, interpret that as how you may, as a good or a bad thing. But it's a really...
Yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, no, I did see it. I'm an idiot.
Oh, did you?
I just checked it. Yeah. Yeah, I liked the movie. I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5. That's good.
Oh, so did I. Okay.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so, I mean...
Yeah, now I remember it. Jesus.
It's kind of one of those films where some incident has happened that has forced this family of three into an underground shelter. You know, they have food, they have beds, but they spend day in and day out in fear of whatever is prowling around on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
The how and why of that is eventually explained, but you kind of got to sit with it and stick with it.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of surprised at where it went, because in the third act, I was like, oh, shit, it's going off the rails. And then I was like, wait a second, they're getting it back on the rails, and it actually makes sense, kind of. So,
mm-hmm.
But she's a fantastic character. I really liked Claire. She's the mother in this family, and she's kind of, I don't want to say she's the drag, but she's more of the pragmatist out of her and her husband, played by Alexander Skarsgård. Because he's more like the kind of telling his daughter like these sort of nice sentiments, sort of like these fantastical things that make things feel better, whereas Claire is more like the realist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is our situation, you know. You can tell our daughter stuff, you know, to sort of help her escape things, which is essential at certain points in that film, and really well done, I think. But she's sort of like, well, we need to have food. Like, the rats got in the food. What are we going to do?
Right, right.
We have to go to the surface. And, you know, she kind of makes these sort of difficult judgment calls.
Yeah.
And you can tell she's wrestling with some of the decisions she has to make. But I really like that about her character, because it made her feel, you know, it made her more endearing. It made her feel more real to me. And her and Alexander Skarsgård actually really have a good back and forth, you know,
mm-hmm.
that actually feels like a couple, kind of sometimes in the midst of, you know, love and affection, and also in the midst of conflict and struggle.
Right.
And especially in a situation that's so extreme, kind of in its small way, though, because
right.
for the most of the film, it's just these three characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing's worse than a film that doesn't know what to do with a limited setting. And the Duffer Brothers do a really good job of not making things boring. The film is really, it's like, I think it's 82 minutes or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
it's not very long, but it moves really fast and really fluidly. And yeah, the performances are fantastic. And like I said, I thought Claire was a fantastic character.
Yeah, when it were, and you know, when it works, it works, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. So,
yeah,
that's a good choice, man. I like that.
Yeah, and I watched it really recently, so it was really fresh in my mind. So,
Well, Johnny, my number three on my list, counting down to one, is it's a character I love from a movie I despise.
Oh boy.
And it's not apocalyptic. It was apocalyptic in the sense for the family that was in it, but
okay.
Other than that, but this is if there's an apocalypse going on and I need to, you know, have somebody by my side, I want this person. Okay. It's the poorly written, the overhyped, the overloved, ludicrous film You're Next from 2011. And my friend Vicky Spiegel, who on Twitter is in the Night Doc, that's her tag on Twitter. Mm. She's put it perfectly. She said, "Yes, I'll suspend my belief for something, film-wise, know, suspension of belief, suspension of disbelief. People call it that. I mean, I read an article like, which one should it be? Mm-hmm. But she said, I cannot suspend logic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's it. So anyway, I'm not going to get into the thick of it, but she's part of there's a wedding anniversary getaway. She's part of this Davidson family party, and Sharni Vinson plays the role of Erin, and Erin is the type of character that I think most horror fans would love to see in any slasher film.
Yeah,
she's home comes under invasion by these lunatic people in stupid animal masks, and I have no love for this piece of shit.
Bill, Spirit Halloween was closed. They had to go to Walmart.
But there's a sale at Party City. Anyway. Anyway. So Sharni Vinson's character, like, everybody sent, you know, what's going on, you know, people are getting, you know, killed, whatnot, people screaming and whining, and she just, like, in a millisecond, she becomes like the queen survivalist. Mm-hmm. And it's just simple. It's just simply like assessing what's going on, where you're at. And it's cool because she's in a strange house. She doesn't know, you know, she doesn't know the whole like outlay of the place or anything like that. And it's right. Like, what can I use in my immediate vicinity to survive? And it's just, this is like, if you're in battle, if you're, you know, I didn't see combat or anything like that, but I did train with people in the Coast Guard, and like, I'm like, what boat's she going on? Yeah, I want to go with Erin. You know, it's like, I want to go with Erin. You know, I want to be with somebody who's like solving problems, and that's what she does. And mm-hmm. She turns the tables on some of these guys that are coming through the windows and crap, and stems the tide from being at a easily run over kill for these, you know, this group. And she's just fantastic in regards to her, how clever she is, being cool under pressure. I mean, all of those things that I think we would all want to be if shit's going down. And so if there's an apocalypse, I want Erin.
You know what, Bill? It's funny because years ago we did a show on Your Next where I argued that it was a good movie while you tore the thing apart. You know what's funny is over the years I've watched it a few more times, and each subsequent time the seams came to the point where it was like a tattered shoe by the last time I watched it.
Tattered shoe.
it really is. It's one of those movies, and I find this to be the case with Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett. I feel this way about The Guest as well, because that's a film that got substantially less good the more I watched it, which is a shame, because it's like, oh, if I just watched it that one time, I could still hold that idealized notion of it, but yeah. Curiosity and such. But you're right, Bill. Erin is the bright shining light in that film. Cool. Because you know what, I love the fact that she's an outsider as well. She's I don't know if they describe where her character is from, if she's Australian or from New Zealand or but she's got that accent. And, you know, she's the character kind of like Barbara in Night of the Living Dead 90.
Yes, yes.
Where everybody around her is acting like pretty much a idiot in a bad horror movie.
Yep.
And she's the only one who is being proactive and assertive. Mm-hmm. You know, and she has a very particular set of skills, like you said. So I really love that about her, and it's almost like, man, someone, we should rewrite that movie, Bill, and really give it.
Oh man!
Sort of pile on the challenges for Erin and Sharni, who, by the way, is a total sweetheart. I met her last year at a Monster Mania con, and she is. You know, there were only a couple people in line, but each person who came up to her, she would look at the picture they picked out, and she would go to a behind-the-scenes story.
Nice.
Yeah, I think the three guys in front of me like picked up Your Next pictures, so she was telling behind the scenes stories about Your Next. I picked up a picture from a house on Willow Street, so she was telling me stories about that. And you know, nice. you didn't have to prompt her. She just like immediately went into it. She's so nice. So if you get a chance to meet her at a convention, by all means, she's as awesome in person as she is in Your Next. So
that's excellent, man. I love hearing that. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Love it. Good deal.
Well, Bill, my next one is an actress who I kind of associate with a specific strain of 1980s post-apocalyptic films. She appeared in two by the infamous Bruno Mattei and Claudio Fragasso. And it is Greta Garretta.
Love Greta Garretta. I love her, man.
She is fucking awesome, too.
She is, man.
She played Chocolate in Rats, yep. Night of Terror from 1984, and she also played Coster in Shocking Dark from 1989. In, you know, both films, she's sort of playing a badass character, you know.
Because she is a badass.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, if you see her in Demon, she's playing a hooker, but she turns into, like, the first demon, and she sort of rains hell down on the movie theater, and it's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, in Rats Night of Terror, she's part of a biker gang who's roaming from place to place in the fallout of the bomb. you know, and, you know, she has that tough side, but she also has that sort of, you know, vulnerable side. And she's also got a sense of humor about things at all times. You know, and some of it's ridiculous. You know, there's scenes where she's getting stuffed rats thrown at her, and you have to try your best to act convincing. I kind of like her in Shocking Dark, though, because, I mean, for those who haven't seen it, Shocking Dark is a blatant ripoff of Aliens, but I think it's a lot more entertaining than Aliens. there are lines and scenes that are, like, ripped verbatim from that film, so... But she's actually playing the head of the Space Force. you know, it starts with Venice, you know, being polluted in, you know, years down the road. And some scientists are going in to try and implement something to combat the pollution, but they wind up getting killed by something unknown. So these space marines are sent in to investigate and see what's going on, and she's sort of the leader of the group, but it's kind of fascinating because, you know, she has her stature is shorter than ever. She still carries herself extremely well. Okay. You know, it's not just a character carrying a gun and shooting stuff, even though that's part of it, but she's very assertive. Given the ridiculousness of the plot and the dialogue, she does really well with it. Her introduction is basically a locker room takedown of all of the people under her command, basically.
Right. I gotta see this, man.
You know, I'll loan you my copy.
Yay! Because
you'll either love it or you'll hate it.
Yeah, so. But I have to see it. I love Greta, man. She's awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, if you like Greta and you haven't seen it, by all means, check her out in it. She's hilarious, but, you know, she has that sense of power, kind of, and she really carries herself well. And I just love her in both of those movies. She's a treat to watch every time. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, well, we follow each other on Twitter, so I want to... definitely want to check it out, man. Because I've seen her in Demons and all, you know, a couple of others, but I didn't see that one yet.
You know, I saw her at a horror convention probably about 10 years ago. And
we didn't talk to her? Oh.
Well, it was funny because I was going down the line and she commented on my shirt because Camille Keaton was at the convention too.
Oh, okay.
So I was wearing an I Spit on Your Grave shirt, and as I passed by her table, she was like, "Oh, I Spit on Your Grave." And I was like, "Yeah," and I was like, "Oh,
how you doing?"
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. It was kind of like that, and she was like, "You know, Camille looks Camille looks great. And I was like, yeah, she does. She looks better than ever. And you know what? Goretta looked fantastic, too. It looked mm-hmm. like she hadn't aged a day since the 80s. So I was like, yeah.
And it's funny that you mentioned Camille Keaton, because originally she was on my like long list.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, for I Spit on Your Grave. And then I'm thinking, she might have gone so to the other side now. With, like, I don't know if we could bring her back to, like, control her a little bit. What's like...
Oh, you know. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, don't kill them. No, they're good. No, no. Oh. You know, like, it's like, like, she's just like, you know, she can't stop herself.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a Ms. 45 kind of situation. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Aliens, because I'm not going to talk about that, because, I don't like that movie either. But I do love the original. From 1979, and at least in this film, it is hard to deny the impressive power of one Lieutenant Ripley. I love Sigourney Weaver in this. You know, when I saw my parents didn't allow me to see it because they just published that stupid article on that one purse, that one ticket guy who passed out watching a movie.
Oh.
I was like, and they're like, well, we don't think it's right for you yet, son. I'm like, okay. So I have never seen Alien on the big screen, but I'm better now. Okay. But I've watched it a billion times, and it's one of my all-time favorite films for many, many reasons. But I love Sigourney Weaver's character in there. She's strong in the beginning, you know, because she's the third in charge, third officer on the Nostromo. And, you know, she doesn't play games. She's straightforward. She tries to be nice, but if you're not nice, you're going to hear it. And she follows protocol when she, again, she's, it wasn't that, like, she's like a by-the-book person, but it's like, ooh, if we let him in, the whole crew could be infected. I can't do that. I can't let you guys in. Yeah, but he's going to die. And she's thinking, well, there's, what, seven of us? And it's like, I'm sorry, you can't. And then, well, we know what happens, you know, after that. But, and again, her transformation from her character into, you know, it's like, okay, we got to fight this thing. We got to kill it, you know. We can continue with this plan. And then when it's executed and she finds herself alone, then the whole fear factor increases far more, you know, she actually, you know, with the coolant being gone and, you know, the ship heating up and all this, you know, stuff going off, the sirens, like all of this noise pressure, which would drive anybody bonkers. You know, she sees this alien creature from her vantage point to her escape pod. And it's like, oh, man. So it's like, you know, she's trying to be quiet. She's trying not to freak out. And it was great because you got to see her all along through the films, her strength and her vulnerabilities, but her overcoming those vulnerabilities, you know, which I really enjoyed very much. And I loved it. And, you know, in the end, when she thinks she's safe and she realizes she's not, and the whole world got smaller for her. I mean, she's on a ship and now she's on a smaller ship, you know, and
how am I going to do this?
Yeah. How am I going to do this? And she's suddenly like, okay, where am I at? And again, just like, you know, Sharni Vincent's character in You're Next, it's like, okay, what's around me? What can I use? What can I do to survive? And she doesn't quit. She doesn't give up on herself. And it was great. In Aliens, they made her a bitch, which I thought was awful. you know, a self-righteous bitch. And I'm saying it like that because that's how she was presented. And I was like, this is not the character. And in the third movie, she became like some bizarro mystic. And in the fourth one, it was just stupid. Just
We don't talk about the fourth one, Bill.
Oh, man. The only one good line in that whole movie. Ron Perlman, when they find out they're going back to Earth. That piece of shit. You know, it's like, that's enough for me, man, right there. But, the original Ripley.
It turns 40 this year, by the way, too.
I know. I think we should do a show on it.
Yeah, no, I was actually going to suggest that at some point. So, yeah. You know what, Bill? That's a good call. And, you know, tying it into, an actual apocalyptic scenario, Ripley implements She takes control to actually implement an apocalyptic scenario in the end there, where she puts the what is it, the self-destruct code in.
It's a nuclear discharge.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like, you know what, everyone's dead except me. I got to do this, you know, because this is what I know, and this should take care of the problem. And it doesn't seem extreme, or you actually, as a viewer, if you're watching it the first time, you don't know what to expect when that ship blows up, you know, how it's going to look or what it's going to be like.
Yeah, and she really is playing God in a way, because she's like, you know, she wants to destroy this species, but well, she's not, you know, she's taking this thing out, but you know, and then in the great thing about aliens is she's like, we're gonna nuke it. She's like, we have to kill all of these things. They can't. It's like trying to kill a cockroach, you know, that could really, really kill you. It's like, she's like,
it's the only way to be sure.
Yeah, the only way to be sure, absolutely. And you know, she's like, we're gonna take these sons of bitches out, you know, and we have to. Because if they get on Earth, it's going to be lights out for a planet.
Well, I kind of like your call, Bill, like how she's playing God, but at the same time, when she tries to undo the over, when she tries to override it, exactly. Mother's not having any of it, and she's just coming back with her cold voice saying, well, screw you. You made your bed, now sleep in it, kind of thing.
Mother, turn the coolant back on. You have self-destruct will commence, and you know, you bitch, and like she smashes shit. And Helen Horton did the voice of Mother in the movie.
Nice.
Helen Horton, who passed away in 2009.
And you know what, Bill? I think we've mentioned it before, but I have a soft spot for Ripley's humanity towards going back for the cat.
Oh, really? I'm shocked, Johnny.
I'm saying that because my cat's giving me dagger eyes right now.
Yeah,
so.
Your cat's like, yeah, you better say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, Bill, this film franchise has a fair number of strong female characters, I think, to choose from, because they all kind of revolve around the same scenario. It is the end of the world, and the zombies have taken over. And once again, we're back in George Romero territory. I'm going with Francine, played by Galen Ross, in the original Dawn of the Dead.
Sounds good to me, man. Bring it.
I haven't watched this movie in a while, but I feel like Fran is a character who goes through a lot of changes during the film in terms of like asserting herself and kind of coming into her own in the face of like an extenuating circumstance. She's pregnant, it's revealed shortly after kind of the shit hits the fan. But she's kind of quiet, she's kind of passive, and you know, I think Romero's kind of being keen, because I think some of this is meant to be like a reflection of her being exhausted from what's going on around her, but also exhaustion from the pregnancy as well. Mm-hmm. If sort of fatigue. So even in a featurette on the Ultimate Edition DVD set, which is very old and out of print at this point, Galen Ross even says about Fran, she said Fran was the drag for like the early parts of the movie. And I kind of like that she comes out and says that, because it sort of takes you by surprise, because you think Fran, oh, she might be dead weight, or she might be zombie food or something like that, because, you know, for whatever reason, she's not assertive. The guy's kind of bust on her for being like, well, you know, you're not going to be left alone, or we're not going to give you a gun until you learn how to handle yourself.
Right.
And I think she kind of takes it as a challenge, actually. It's like, okay, well, you think I can't do this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it just as well, if not better than you guys do it. You know, because she doesn't want to be, she says she doesn't want to be den mother to them, to three men. And, you know, it's really interesting, the interactions between the quartet. And I really like that, because by the end of the film, you see her really transformed as a character to the point where she's like, she's able to do what she needs to do to self-preserve, with or without the, mm-hmm. you know, the people she's been living with for months, if not, you know, a year, kind of in this shopping center. I think it's really a lot of stuff Romero touches on, like some asides about abortion.
Absolutely.
You know, her saying like she wants to be part of the plan, you know, like she feels left out of things, and the guys take her seriously, and thank the gods there's not some creepy rapey subplot going on in this film. Which I could see modern filmmakers jumping on. You know, it's like, oh, it's three guys and one woman, oh, what are we gonna do with the apocalypse type shit. So I really like her character. Out of all the female characters Romero's written, Fran is the one who really jumped out at me, even though I haven't watched that film in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved it when I was younger. I watched the hell out of it.
And her character, now.
Yeah, I know. I'm podcasting with you, Billy. Yeah.
Oh, man. You're such a loser.
Welcome to the Losers Club, Bill.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
Bill.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So this comes down to our top pick for apocalyptic female characters.
And my number one never appears on any lists, ever. She's horror. She's in horror. This is a horror film. And her actions prevent an apocalypse.
Ooh.
A world-ending apocalypse. And she's never mentioned.
Mm.
And that is... I don't want a drum roll. All right, quit beating on your abs, Johnny.
That's not what I'm beating, Bill.
You sick bastard.
Anyway,
it's Tammy Lawrence, Alexandra Amberson from Wishmaster, 1997.
Oh, my good call, man.
Thank you. My guilty pleasure film that I love to no end. I've watched it a billion times. Met Andrew Devoff, who plays the djinn, or Nathaniel Demarest, and he's just amazing. He was cool to talk to. Because after I said, hey, man, that movie was a blast. I loved it. And he said, I wanted to do something good for the genre. And I'm like, man, you know, like, dude, you did it. Thanks, you know. So directed by Robert Kurtzman, who's most renowned for his special effects work, which definitely show up in this. There's a smorgasbord of horror, you know, actors of high fame. Robert Englund, Jenny O'Hara's in there, Kane Hodder, Tony Todd, who plays Johnny Valentine. He was in it for like a minute and he just destroyed it. He was just amazing. Buck Always. Flower, Angus Scrimm, Ted Raimi, Reggie Bannister, Tom Savini. I mean, the list goes on. But back to Tammy Lauren. She plays Alexandra Amberson, who is a gemologist, you know, with gems, obviously. She can study them. She works for a semi shady guy who's like, you know, trying to, you know, obviously make money with, you know, gem sales and all. And this gem comes to her that I don't want to give the story away, but what happens is she has three wishes thrust upon her from a djinn, and she has to honor that. And if she makes the wrong wish, once she gives the last wish, she discovers that the djinn is going to be able to stay in our plane, bring his friends along, and existence as we know it is going to be lost. Mm-hmm. We're going to be enslaved, killed, destroyed, and the djinn will rule the earth. And the great thing is, you know, the djinn has such hubris. He's like, hey, man, I've walked between worlds. I've lived for thousands of years. I've seen and heard everything. You know, he's like, you know, I'm carved from, like, you know, like brilliance, and you're just a peeny little human. And and she knows it. And the cool thing is she's a strong character, She sticks by her convictions. We see that from early on when a friend of hers is trying to become romantic, and she's like, "No, we have to keep our friendship the way it is. I don't want to even give it a shot." You know, and she's not afraid to stand up to people, and she's small. She's a small person, but she's big. You know, in a sense. Like Sharni Vincent's character, she could figure things out, which is great. She's also a basketball coach for a group of girls.
Right.
And the cool thing is, whenever you teach, and I taught for 12 years, whenever you teach, anytime I told my students something, I'm like, well, I can't be a hypocrite or a liar. I have to do it too. So the cool thing is, she remembers what she's teaching her girls in basketball, and she applies what she's teaching them to herself. So that's really honorable, and it helps her in big, big ways. So she stands up to this supernatural force. She stands up to this rich guy, you know, who's brilliantly played by Robert Englund in a role that's quite different for him from what we normally see, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the hell that she goes through, the torture, the possibility of, you know, seeing people that she knows die. Possibly losing her sister, the world could end if she doesn't make the right choice. And in all of it, she grounds herself at the last possible moment, and she figures it out. But throughout the whole thing, she investigates, she learns, she researches, she combats, she doesn't give in, and again, she had the perseverance, she had all of the things that the other characters have that I talked about. But she has it the most, and in the end, she truly prevents an apocalypse.
You know what? That's a great choice, Bill. I did not see that coming. Wishmaster is just such a fun movie.
I love it.
Yeah, and I don't know that I would call it a guilty pleasure. I think it's a legitimately good movie.
It's one of the 84 on my list of best horror films ever made.
Damn, man. Nice.
Yeah, 184 out of... I'm almost at 2,600 horror films.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You're a machine, Billy.
Oh, well, boy, the things I've suffered through on this list, man.
Get off the cross, Bill. Come on.
No, well, you just said Jesus.
That's right. You don't fuck with the Jesus.
No, you don't. So what is your number one, man? I can't wait for this.
Well, Bill, I watched a movie very recently, within a couple weeks, and I just one Friday night I decided I'm gonna sit down and finally watch this movie because I had the Blu-ray and I hadn't yet watched it, never seen the movie before, but I'd heard so much about it, and that movie is Threads.
Oh boy, here we go.
You've seen Threads, right, Bill?
Have I? Hold on. I'll tell you in 2 seconds, buddy.
Okay.
Got to go to my master. Is this from 1984 or the...
Yeah, it was the BBC.
1984? Yeah. 1984? No, I don't... Yes, I... Yeah! Oh, my... Yes, now I know. Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, this is a movie...
Oh, God, this one. Oh, my God. I don't think I could ever watch it again.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it. It's like
I can't get it out of my head. I saw it when it first aired.
Yeah, I can't imagine what people were thinking while they were watching it. Actually, it's like, you know what would be really brutal, and you would have to have like suicide watch people in the theater, is if you re-release Threads in IMAX.
Oh my gosh!
People would be like diving off. People would just be ending it all in the theater, I think, if that happened. In any case, the character of Ruth, played by Karen Meagher, this is the one character who we follow through pretty much the entire film. She is the first. She's the first character we see at the very start, and she's one of the last characters we see in the film, actually. And the film is directed by Mick Jackson from a Barry Hines script. And what makes this film so noteworthy is how it takes the notion of a nuclear holocaust and treats it as if it were actually happening. It doesn't have the stylistic flourishes. There may be like two shots I could point out that seem a bit stylized, but otherwise the
right,
film
right.
The film is extremely grim and bleak, and there is like no fucking intimation of hope in this film, which makes it pretty depressing. But the character of Ruth, she begins the film not unlike Fran in Dawn of the Dead. She is pregnant, and yep. her and her boyfriend are talking about, well, what do we want to do? And there's some sort of melodrama revolving around that in the early going, and they decide to stay as a couple. They decide to keep the child. They decide to get married. That doesn't come to fruition because the bomb drops and screws everything up.
As bombs are apt to do.
Yes, and she is kind of, you know, how The Hills Have Eyes had the lucky ones died first tagline.
Yeah.
This is kind of the same thing, because she doesn't get caught like in the direct immediate area of the blast. She gets exposed to the fallout, and she's kind of cursed for the rest of the film to kind of wander this irradiated, destroyed landscape while carrying this child.
Oh,
and
yeah.
she eventually all these burdens of this, you know, this irradiated world are put on her shoulders, basically. Mm-hmm. So she's left with the burden of having this child alone. You know, it's really horrible and horrifying, but the character is so, despite how bleak thick things get, her character is kind of, I feel like her character is supposed to be a bit of a beacon for the viewer. It's like we latch onto her because we keep seeing her.
Well, she's our hope for the species.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's kind of a
like
spoiler.
Children of Men.
Yeah, very good call, Bill, there. You know, which is another apocalyptic piece. Love,
God, what a brilliant film that is.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's heavy stuff.
Oh man.
But you know, Ruth as a character, she's very much you're following her, you feel heavily for her because the situation is presented so convincingly. I'm kind of amazed at how they pulled off what they pulled off with that film, because it does feel like they bombed Sheffield, you know, to make the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's that level of detail and like, oh my God, heart and throat horror and science backing up the details of it, but there's still that sense of humanity represented in the Ruth character, you know. And you know,
Karen Meagher was great.
Oh man, yeah. And it's I imagine that role was really draining and tough to perform, but you know, so Billy, you were trying to find notes of inspiration and people to hang out with in the apocalypse. It's like I just kind of was like, I'd hang out with Ruth, but man, just the notion of I'd be like Burgess Meredith trying to find a way to kill myself probably in time enough at last. But yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny for her name Ruth in the movie. Actual word Ruth is an archaic word meaning a feeling of pity, distress, or grief.
Mm.
And the name Ruth is clearly a Hebrew Hebrew baby name. Is companion, friend, and vision of beauty.
Mm.
You know, so the silver lining in a dark nuclear cloud, you know, it's just, that movie's so disconcerting. I've seen it once, and I remember it vividly.
Yeah, that the last shot in the movie, I mean, is just one among. It's relentless, it's devastating, it's overwhelming, and those words almost don't really even do it justice as to what kind of effect it has. I was just sitting in my living room watching this on my TV, and it just totally, yeah, I just felt wrecked.
Knocked you out. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Just by the time it was over, I felt wrecked because I was like, this is probably how it would go down, you know?
Mm-hmm. So how old was I when I saw this thing, man? I was 18, 19. I was, what, 19?
Mm.
I was 19 when I saw this? I can't add. Yeah, I was 19, and I was, oh, man. This is actually one of the, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, I was so, you know, I was studying history in college. I just started, and it was, you know, I was so, you know, freaked out by that and about us versus them in regard to, the, you know, the eagle versus the Soviet bear, you know, and now people are like buddy-buddy with them. It's so bizarre.
Oh, man.
You know, but it's just weird. And that that helped. I'm not saying a movie did it, but it, you know, it, fear was enough for me to vote a particular way in my younger years that I'm not proud of. But damn, yeah, that, oh, really? If you want to, like, you know, it's not like a hey, let's have a Threads party, you know. But if you want to see some potent television, this this is the one to watch. Man, that's a I wouldn't have guessed this one.
Yeah, you know, Bill, it's one of those things. Yeah, and I mean, if I hadn't watched it, it wouldn't have been on the list. But my, my God, I just, it had such a profound effect on me. And
Well, the United States had The Day After Tomorrow, and that has its merits, but it doesn't compare to Threads. Threads was just hyper dark. It's like, it could have been directed by David Lynch a little bit if he wanted to. It's like, yeah, make it darker. But it's already dark. Make it darker.
Hey, Billy, make Threads a darker movie.
Okay, David. I'm on it.
But, yeah, I mean, the use of sound and some of the ways the visuals are framed definitely have kind of a Lynchian feel to them. Yeah.
And, you know, how do you react in during the apocalypse? Like, what do you do when it's, like, suddenly all over? It's like suddenly coming down with, like, a major illness or something, or, like, you know, people, like, you know, have a heart attack. Like, where did that come from? And it's like, oh, man, you know? You know, or anything in life where you're blindsided, you know? It's like, what do you do? And that's part of it. Like, how do you get back up again, you know?
Yeah, and there is that, notions of that are actually explored in the film, but it's, there's still that, like, just that veil of, like, yeah, things are... If things are going to get better, it's going to take generations for it to get better, you know?
Oh, man, yeah.
If it ever does. So, I mean, I have to give Ruth credit as, you know, I don't think the movie would be what it is without her, because she, like I said, is the one character you're following pretty much through the whole thing, even though you're not, she's not in every scene, so...
Yep, and she actually plays a small part in 28 Weeks Later as one of the car park civilians.
Oh, jeez, that's kind of ironic. Yeah.
Yeah, she has 39 credits to her name, but that was, yeah, man, what a film, man! Wow, to think our apocalyptic show would end on a downer.
Sorry, Bill.
No, that's cool. So, man, all right, that's it.
Yeah, and if you and if anybody out there wants to share their Women of the Apocalypse, however you like to define apocalyptic, please let us know on Twitter or Facebook or wherever. So,
absolutely, man. I love it. And on that note, I'm going to do scream outs too. A bunch of awesome women that you could find on Twitter. And I'm going to give you their names and their Twitter handles and a little bit about them right now. And the first on the list is the beautiful, beautiful, intelligent one. They're all beautiful and intelligent. I'm just gonna list the names, man. Carol Alt. That's model Carol Alt. And she's the international supermodel, actress, entrepreneur, raw food enthusiast, author, and host. And you could follow what she's up to on Twitter or on at carolalt.com. Melanie McCurdy, who has been with the show for many, many moons since the beginning. Yes. She writes horror. She's a curmudgeonness. Locust Wrangler, professional air guitars, and watch for her upcoming album, Silent Notes. And she was also in The Orphan Killer, too, if you didn't know. She's out of Canada. Go check out her musings, her writings at melaniemccurdy.com. Inked Gamer Girl, G-U-R-L. I'm a gamer girl, and I'm a lover of film and TV, PlayStation, and she's out of Camden Town in London. She's just fabulous on Twitter. Check her out. No dull moments with her. She's just amazing. Megan Navarro, and you've heard of her, and you might not know it. And that is Haunted Meg. That's her handle on Twitter. She's a writer, avid reader, baker, horror movie fanatic, and journalist. And this is where you've heard of her before, on Be Disgusting for Bloody Disgusting, Vulture, and B Movies D. And she's out of Houston, Texas. And check her out on bloodydisgusting.com/author/Megan. She's fantastic. She writes really awesome articles.
Nice.
Denise Gossett.
Yes.
And that's her handle as well. She's an actress in Get the Gringo, I Saw the Light, The Office, New Adventures of Old Christine, Veronica Mars. You can check out her reel on imdb.com under Denise Gossett. And she's also the woman behind Shriekfest. Great festival director. One of the best festivals I've ever been to out in L.A. Just amazing. And definitely check her out on imdb.com. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And the one thing I knew about Denise Gossett right on, you know, one of my scripts did really well at Shriekfest.
Yes.
And she doesn't forget. Like, producers might come there and say, hey, Denise, you got some stuff? She'll contact all of the old finalists, you know, whether they won or not there. If they're a finalist, like a top 10 finalist, you know, she'll say, hey, this producer's looking for X. And I was like, man, that's she's a sweetheart. And she was the second person interviewed on The Last Knock.
Yeah, you know what, Bill? Just everything you've said about her is great. I just feel like she really does care about,
she,
you know.
She does.
Yeah.
And she's so sweet. And but she sticks by her convictions as well. And I remember when I was at the one for my script, Earthquack was a top 10 finalist. And I went there, and she's saying, you know, it's really difficult for her to make these decisions with the scripts and with the films, like who wins and who doesn't, and who doesn't get in to begin with. And she, you know, she got teary-eyed over it because she knows how hard everybody works, but she knows the decisions must be made. So I think she's just an absolutely beautiful person. Melanie Wise. Yes. I Am Melanie Wise is her handle. She's an actor, producer, and the principal, the woman behind Artemis Pix, and she's the founder of the it's more successful each year, Artemis Film Fest. And you could check her out at artemismotionpictures.com, also on IMDb. She's out of Santa Monica. She's awesome, and I hope to get to the next Artemis Film Festival because it's about women in action. And it's just fantastic. And everything she does is great. The people she knows, the movie she says, hey, Billy, you need to watch this. Okay. And she's never wrong. So that's cool.
Nice.
Tracy_TR.
Yeah.
She's the chief operations officer of Terror Records Incorporated and the owner of Scream Radio, where you should go to get your horror because it's fantastic. And she also loves wine, reading, and bacon. So I'm madly in love with her. What can I say? And you can check out her site at Tracy, and that's EE.co. A woman who has been with us from the beginning as well. Real Jilly G, my sister from another mister. She's an occasional writer, not famous. Well, she's famous to me. She's a lover of life, music, art, animals, photography, writing, reading, supporting the arts. And she's an indie supporter of all things Canadian. Check out her writings, her musings, her insights at crimsonquintessence.com. And we have two more for tonight, Johnny.
Okay.
In fact, this one is the... She's wonderful. She's smart. She's witty. She looks fabulous. She puts out these great little video reviews. And her emotions always come through. I don't think... I'd love to play poker with her because it's like... Oh, Yeah, she's got an ace. Chauncey K. Robinson. Who's Chauncey? That's Miss Chauncey K.R. on Twitter. She's an award-winning journalist, writer, and horror lover. You could find her stuff at People's World. She's also a host at After Buzz TV and the Twisted Girl Next Door TV. She's the approved film and TV critic for Rotten Tomatoes. She's out of L.A., and she is just fantastic. Follow her. No dull moments ever. And last but not least, another person who has been here since the beginning, the wonderful Dixie Fairy, and that is Kim McDonald. She's a horror junkie from Charleston, and you can check out her work at fairymusings.com. And she's just fabulous, and she's also contributed some writing to Crash Palace as well. So if I'm going into the apocalypse with the tough women that I talked about in Fantasyland from movies, these are the other women I would want with me, because I know they're not going to take any crap. And if there's a villain that needs to be brought down, they're done. These women are going to do it. So really excited about that. So
I love Kim's style, Bill. She always looks like she's dressed for the apocalypse, like it's going to happen in any second. I love that about her.
Yeah, and I bet you she has music picked out for it, too.
Oh, fuck yeah. If you're going to be stuck in a car with someone, that's going to be... She's going to have the bomb-ass soundtrack. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, here's the music, and I got the grenades in the trunk. All right, Kim, let's ride. You know,
here's the sawed-off shotgun. Stick your head out the window and start blasting.
Dude, I could see... It was funny that you mentioned that, because I could envision her with a sawed-off shotgun.
Nice.
Kim, we want a picture of you with a sawed-off shotgun.
I think what you're saying, Bill, is you need to write a script and put Kim in the movie.
Boy, man. That's an idea. All right.
There we go.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell people where they could find me, and then you're going to close out the show, my friend. Okay. I'm Billy Crash. You could find me at Crash Palace on Twitter, CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and articles and other fun stuff. And you can also find Crash Palace and the Last Knock merchandise on Redbubble.com. Johnny.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Num. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find me on Crash Palace writing stuff.
Writing damn good stuff. All right. Excellent, man. So I guess we're riding off into the dust cloud, huh?
Yeah, this is the sound of me slowly waving goodbye.
Riders on the storm. That was just awful. I have water in the fridge. It's not here where it belongs. That's why I'm like slurring sometimes. So.
Bill, you choose the very end of the show to drag out your Johnny Cash routine. Come on, you should have done it at the beginning.
Johnny Cash, that was the Doors, man.
No, I was thinking of like... I keep getting that confused with Johnny Cash.
That's okay, man. Ghost Riders in the Sky, Johnny. That's all it's about. Ghost Riders in the Sky.
I'm terrible. I apologize.
You apologize?
Yeah, on that note, let's get out of here.
Goodbye.
Bye.